So welcome everybody for this session. So this is a new opportunity. So we are missing a panel moderator as well as one of the panelists is also missing. So anybody can come and sit here too. So just it's going to be a group discussion. So even though you're all distributed, so we're going to get you engaged with the mic. So and Ted is actually, he's remotely attending. So this is part of the virtual conference. People can present too. So he's able to see the slides. He's going to speak with you all. He's going to briefly provide some slides he has created and showing some of the trends he has done. But feel free to, we have mic and we will come and just be interactive. And several people are here from vocabulary and messaging. So supposed to kind of capture this, what we need to do moving forward, and then we'll see how we can coordinate this. So I'm a CDC contractor. I'm also been active with vocabulary and messaging community of practice, and also been helping with the several meaningful use initiatives. So let's be an interactive discussion. With that, Ted Klein, just we don't have a moderator, so you have to introduce yourself.
Okay, well, hello, everybody. My name is Ted Klein. I've been involved in various development efforts at the CDC for over 10, 12 years, and my focus has been in vocabulary and messaging. I've been active in HL7 for 20 years, and I, for the past 8 years, I've been a co-chair of the vocabulary workgroup at HL7. I'd like to give a little bit of introduction to this topic and the community of practice, and set the stage for the discussion that we'll have this morning. So you can go to the next slide, Sundek. So basically, since this is a public health conference, if it isn't obvious to everyone already, vocabulary and messaging is a key and central foundational component for public health. A lot of the reason for this is healthcare IT makes very intensive use of vocabulary for both clinical and administrative things. Public health, in engaging in some of its primary goals for our surveillance and monitoring public well-being and general welfare in the health area, needs to interact with the healthcare IT the healthcare delivery system and its IT component. Now, there are a number of technologies out there that have been used for quite some time, such as HL7 has been around for more than 20 years, for folks interacting closely with the CDC and working with the technology that's been developed over the last years. At the CDC, there are technologies such as the FIN messaging system that have been fairly widely implemented. We'll also talk about the vocabulary system a little bit later on. And one of the key components of this is both vocabulary and messaging require a fair amount of expertise. People need exposure to available products and technologies. They need education. They need assistance in implementation. So there's a lot of expertise required. Next slide. So the CDC vocabulary and messaging community of practice helps provide education, guidance, and exposure in the vocabulary and messaging area to the public health community. Okay. There are two primary areas of focus, which are reflected in the name, vocabulary use in public health. That represents diseases, lab tests, results, statistical information that are used in analysis, such as race and ethnicity, locations, healthcare services, etc. There are a large number of code systems, both CDC-developed code systems, as well as the standard code systems that I'm sure everyone has heard of and may be working with, such as LOINC and SNOMED, ICD, CPT, and others. There are also vocabulary services in public health. The CDC has deployed what's called the FINVADS, Vocabulary and Access Distribution System, which helps to provide vocabulary for use in public health. The standards for messaging that carry all of this stuff have been primarily HL7, both version 2 and CDA is now emerging. And the vocabulary, the VMCOP has a web presence on PH Connect. So anyone who wants to get involved in the community or see what's going on can log in or get a register for a user ID in PH Connect and can access all of the information there. Next slide. The history of the community, the CDC established the Community Practice Program back in 2006. It was under discussion throughout 2005. It's been around a while. I want to give a shout-out to Mamie Jennings-Mamery, who played a very, very key role in this creation of all of the communities. The vocabulary messaging community was one of the very earliest community to be established, and it started out as a vocabulary community. 3 years after its establishment, messaging was included because messaging and vocabulary are so tightly connected. The VMCOP has had regular sessions since 2006, so for 5 years now. It's been involved in these sessions. We're currently conducting monthly webinars on a wide variety of topics of interest to the public health community. Next slide. It's sponsored by the CDC. All the participation is on a volunteer basis for the communities of practice. Currently, there are three co-leads, Lynn Lee, who's with the New York State Department of Public Health, Nikolai Lipsky, who is with the CDC, and myself. In addition to leading the community and organizing the webinars, the presentations, the leads also represent the vocabulary messaging community on an organization called the Communities of Practice Council, which is a coordinating body across all of the different communities at the CDC. Now, there are other volunteers that assist tremendously in the vocabulary and messaging community practice, and I want to give a special shout-out to Sundar Ganeshan, who's been a tremendous help for years. Next slide. The current activities in the vocabulary and messaging community practice are, as I said, the webinars that we give are the primary activity. They explain vocabulary and messaging. We've had several webinars dedicated to meaningful use regulations coming out. We've also had webinars on the syndromic surveillance guides that are under development. We coordinate very, very closely with other communities of practice that are closely related, such as the laboratory messaging community of practice, and we've had some joint sessions with them. There have been educational and exposure sessions on tools and technologies for implementation, for maintenance, and periodically we also give presentations and webinars on special topics of interest that the community requests. And the model is that members of the community feel that there is an unmet need for education and exposure, and they communicate that need to one of the co-leads, and we fold that into our schedule for presentations. And we often find experts in the community to make presentations so that we can disseminate all of this knowledge and information out to the public health community. Next slide. So some of the important other activities going on that are affecting everyone is the Office of the National Coordinator has a Health Information Technology Standards Committee, and they've chartered a vocabulary task force. Basically, this is to focus on gaps and issues and needs for vocabulary in the implementation of the legislation around HIT that has been emerging in the last several years. So the Vocabulary Task Force develops recommendations for the HIT Standards Committee that eventually get folded into the rules that ONC publishes for meaningful use. All the documentation is freely available from the ONC Vocabulary Task Force. The meetings are public meetings. If people want to schlep down to Washington, D.C. for the meetings, I believe that people may attend freely and all this information is available. They've been doing very, very good work. Next slide. Hearings are still underway, and they're being held regularly. ONC is working on the stage two of the meaningful use recommendations. There was a very large number of comments received when the first draft was published. A lot of those comments had to do with issues around vocabulary, value sets, code sets, different code systems, versioning. Many of these issues around use and maintenance of vocabulary. The National Library of Medicine is very closely involved. In fact, one of the co-leads of the Vocabulary Task Force is Betsy Humphreys of the National Library of Medicine. National Library of Medicine, everyone should remember, is the administrator of the U.S. extension for SNOMED CT. Next slide. So meaningful use is the thing that everyone is talking about. The phrase was originally introduced by the high-tech legislation of some years ago, laying out objectives and goals from Congress for health information technology deployment out in the United States. Based upon that legislation, there were two significant regulations released, one by ONC and one by CMS. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The CMS incentive program is, everybody paid quite a lot of attention to it because it's cash money. So like any effective incentive program, people get paid for doing the right thing. There is very, very clear guidelines been published for the cash payment. And these are not tiny little nickels and dimes. I mean, for individual professionals, the cash payment is between $44,000 and $64,000. For hospitals and healthcare centers, it starts at $2 million and goes up from there. So these are significant payments for implementing the meaningful use requirements. Because of this money involvement, this is one of the strong reasons why everybody's really interested in understanding what they need to do for meaningful use and doing the right thing. The Office of the National Coordinator went through and produced final rules with more of the technical details for how to implement meaningful use. So several documents released from December 2009 through July 2010, and this is sometimes known as Stage 1 meaningful use. I have some URLs on the slides that you can go out there and you can actually read these rules. All of them are available, and they're all relatively clear. This is the first step, is stage one, and providers have 3 years through 2013 to comply. Next slide. So how does this affect meaningful use? So the meaningful use regulations that were published in the Federal Register explicitly identify the CDC guide for messaging. So this is the HL7 2.5.1 implementation guide for electronic laboratory reporting to public health. So this is explicitly called out in the Federal Register, the published regulations. So needless to say, there's a fair amount of interest in understanding this guide and understanding how to implement it. The guide was developed with messaging groups within the CDC as well as laboratory groups such as FLIP and the other laboratory groups. For those that are interested in seeing what I'm talking about, the final rule in the Federal Register, sections 170.205 and 170.299, are actually the places where you can look up the hard copy of what's called out for public health. LOINC codes are also explicitly called out in section 170.207 of the final rule. So using the CDC ELR messaging guide and using LOINC codes are a requirement to qualify for these incentives for meaningful use and to comply with the regulations. So these are some of the core requirements of stage one meaningful use. LOINC and the messaging guide out of the ELR guide out of the CDC. Next slide. Stage two is under work. The policy committee, the HSE policy committee of ONC, has held hearings throughout 2010 for stage two. A set of definitions for stage two were released in late 2010 for comment, which closed in February 2011, and they received a very, very large number of substantive comments. The comments are still being reviewed and evaluated. They were supposed to be done by now, but things are running late. So the original planned deadline for the final rule for stage two of meaningful use is running late. And so just recently, there was a one-year delay in requirements announced. So the requirements for implementation have been postponed from 2013 to 2014. So that's a key thing that folks need to be aware of, that this has been delayed for a year. Next slide. This brings us to syndromic surveillance. Interestingly enough, syndromic surveillance was originally missing from the very first set of draft meaningful use guidelines. Because of that, the International Society of Disease Surveillance was charged to develop. All right, so I don't know at what point you muted me. I don't know what people heard and what people didn't hear. I was talking about syndromic surveillance.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, how much of my spiel on this slide?
Just start from syndromic.
Okay, so syndromic surveillance had been missing from the first drafts of the meaningful use guidelines. When this was realized, ISDS, which is the International Society for Disease Surveillance, was charged to develop recommendations for syndromic surveillance. So they gathered all the key players in the public health community, CSE, ASTO, NACHO, CDC representatives, lots of folks in the public health community, and they held regular meetings and hearings to develop a set of requirements that could be folded into the meaningful use recommendations, and were focused on the incentives that were published by CMS. The final recommendation document was delivered to CDC on December 31st of 2010. Next slide. So ISDS worked closely with CDC to produce the standards and guidelines for syndromic surveillance. It was an iterative process. I was actually involved in the process of developing the syndromic surveillance guide, where drafts of the guide were given to ISDS for review and feedback. That feedback was brought back into the group to update and modify the guide to produce a new draft. So the most recent draft is available on the CDC website for final comment. There's a link to the PDF file on the slides. The final release of the guide is expected in about a month, released by mid-September. And in the meantime, ISDS is working on the next stage of requirements for the next set of data elements. Next slide. Highlights of the guide. The guide is developed to be able to be implemented in both 251 and 231 of HL7 because so many systems out there are currently running HL7 231 and they don't have the wherewithal to rapidly upgrade to 251 in their institutions. The first iteration of the guide is based on ADT messages. People have called into question why ADT messages were selected when we're primarily dealing with clinical information. But in fact, if you look through carefully the core data elements, Most of them are, in fact, administrative and demographic information. And most of them are the information that is actually currently sent out by almost every HIS system in the nation to its ancillaries using HL7 ADT transactions. And there are a very small handful of clinical-specific items. So ADT messaging was selected in order to minimize the cost and trouble for the community to implement something, and it was built on something that they already pretty much all do. So the guide contains all the details on how to populate the message for each required core data element from the ISDS recommendations. The vocabulary to be used, LOINC, of course, because that's called out in the meaningful use regulations. We also identify SNOMED CT codes, identification of mandatory required codes as well as optional, fields, data types, lengths, all of this detailed information for implementation are in that guide. Next slide. So in conclusion, I just want to reiterate the point that vocabulary and messaging are fundamental to public health surveillance and also in meeting the meaningful use objectives. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah, go ahead.
We do question now. Anybody have any question for Ted?
So he's the moderator, Lin Lee. Just had
introduced. I'm really sorry about missing, you know, moderator me. You know, we have a state emergency call to prepare for the hurricane landing this weekend. So Ted, stay where you are, and you know, any of us, if we can get out, let's try to get home before the hurricane, you know, hit us. Any question for Ted?